More hiring, less unemployment. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. A better-than-expected update on the job market.
The monthly unemployment rate declined to 5.4%. There were 943,000 new jobs reported. The July report was not expected to reflect the impact of the Delta variant. It was compiled in the middle of July, before some local governments imposed mask mandates and other restrictions.
Fox's Jenny Casola. The president may hail the report as progress in a statement soon. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calls it proof Democrats' plans are working. Many Republicans have been critical of renewed mask mandates and vaccine requirements as hurtful to the economy. Congressman Ronny Jackson told Fox,
"They better not start making our kids mandatory for our kids to have this vaccine. That's going to be over the top."
Now, there are more mandates for schools for masks, like in New Jersey and Virginia. More companies are requiring workers to get a COVID vaccine shot, like United, the first major airline to do it. Fox's Jeff Manasso has this live.
Dave, United Airlines says by this fall that its 67,000 employees in the U.S., with some exceptions, will need to get the coronavirus vaccine. As the company and other airlines say incentives have failed to encourage all workers to be vaccinated voluntarily. United says the vaccination mandate will keep workers safe. The timing of its requirement also linked to the FDA's full vaccine approval, which could come as early as next month, when United says that employees will need to show proof of the shot or leave the company. Dave.
Of history at the Summer Games.
Allyson Felix came away with bronze Friday in the women's 400 meter at the Tokyo Olympics. With that finish, Felix scored her 10th career Olympic medal, surpassing the women's mark held by Jamaica's Merlene Audie to become the most decorated female track and field athlete of all time.
Fox's Matt Napolitano, the U.S. won gold in beach volleyball and wrestling. America's listening to Fox News.
Sometimes the world can seem a cold place, so we got to bring the warmth to it. Sometimes the world can seem a broken place, so we gotta strive to fix it. At the end of the day, we are empowered to create the world we wanna live in. So we prepare for the worst, but we must always, always expect the best. Smith & Wesson, empowering Americans.
You don't want to mess with the IRS. They have the power to garnish your paycheck, levy your bank accounts, and even take your home or business. That's all true. But thankfully, they're offering a way out. The Fresh Start Initiative. If you qualify, you could save thousands. The experts at Optima Tax Relief will fight to get you the best deal possible. And they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau to prove it. Call Optima for your free consultation.
Call 800-931-4033. 800-931-4033.
Optima Tax Relief.
For details, visit.
Morning News is brought to you by Sprague Sports on 32nd Street, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters and responsible gun ownership since 1956.
Sprague Sports is Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters. Why? Because Sprague Sports is the difference. Where else can you buy, sell, trade, or consign firearms with free expert appraisals always? There is nothing like Sprague Sports. With 64 years of industry connections to have products in stock when others can't. And all Sprague's firearms come with a lifetime warranty. And talk about customer service. There's a gunsmith always on duty. Sprague's is your Remington warranty center. And when you need it, there's expert one-day sight-in service. But that's not all. Sprague Sports has got training courses, including Arizona CCW, First Shot, Hunter Education, and more. Sprague handles Glock, Blue Label pistols, and is your NFA dealer in suppressors and full autos. That's why we call them the experts. And Sprague's is Yuma's Yeti headquarters. The best Yeti selection and free ice for life. Sprague's has a 10-lane, rifle-certified indoor shooting range and gun rentals you can try before you buy. Serving Yuma's shooting and outdoor needs since 1956. That's the Sprague's difference. Sprague's, 32nd Street, next to Lowe's.
The opinions voiced in this show, Money Talk, are for general information only and not intended for specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management investment advisory services are offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
Good morning, Yuma. Money Talk AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggerberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here. Can't believe it's 8:04 on a Friday. It's going to be a hot one. Good morning, Cody. How are you?
Good morning.
Doing? So tons to talk about, and I you touched on it briefly in your show earlier. I don't even understand where the time's going.
Right.
We're in August. We're halfway done almost with the third quarter.
I was just going to say, yeah, we're almost getting to quarter four now.
Yes, and you think, you know, we were thinking, oh, let's just get through 2020. Oh, let's just get through the first quarter. Kids are back in school. And by the way, the traffic at most of the schools is absolutely ludicrous. I don't know if you've tried going anywhere.
No, I try to stay away from those at that time.
But, you know, I mean, the kids can get back together and start building a routine again. And I hope most of us start building some good routines that maybe will benefit us going forward. You know, you look at some of the options, and I've been talking about calling this the Great American Debt Restructure for quite some time.
Okay.
Where are interest rates right now?
Pretty low.
Pretty low. So I don't care whether it's a house, a car, a boat, a credit card. People have got to start doing a written budget. And I'm sure everybody who's listening to this program, very smart, very intelligent, has their finances squared away. And if that's you, great. You have coworkers, friends, family, even maybe employees that need to hear this, because it is absolutely frustrating the number of people that are wasting billions of dollars combined. And when you look at nationwide, the amount of money that's wasted on not setting up your debt correctly is astoundingly atrocious to me.
Now, oh yeah, exactly. I mean, how do you not have that picture painted?
So for everybody's benefit, here's kind of what started this. Is I met with a not a younger couple, but a moderately younger couple last night, and I kind of had a different trajectory for the show. But when I look at what their situation is, it's like, okay, guys, we got to do this differently. Now, they did it right. They bought a house about 5 years ago. Interest rates were higher because we were coming out of this whole problem back in 08, 09, 2010. But they bought a home at a decent price. Interest rates were significantly higher than they are now under COVID, etc. So they've had some credit issues since then. They've tried to refinance their home with no less than a dozen banks over the last couple of years, and all they're ever told is, no, your credit sucks. Now, when I looked at their credit report, number one, their interest rate is 6.
Okay.
Historically not bad, but it's not a great interest rate right now. But they have one car that's $22,000 as the balance, a $715 payment. They have another car that's an $18,000 balance. That's a $550 payment. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because when you, and for everybody who's listening, here's a fairly simple rule of thumb. It's not perfect. But if you take $6,000 as your balance with decent interest rates the way they are now, you can look around town. There's billboards offering interest rates. But when you take $6,000 of a balance, that's about $100 a month.
Okay.
On a normal 5-year loan, maybe a 6-year loan, depending on how you want to stretch it. But think of those numbers. You take $22,000 as his balance. I know we're all good in math. 6 times 4 is 24. So even if the balance was about $24,000, his payment might be about $400 a month. And I told you it's in excess of $700.
Yeah.
She owes $18,000. I'm pretty good at math. I do it for a living. What's 6 times 3, Cody?
So 18.
18.
Yeah.
So her payment is over $500, and it really should be about $300. If they just simply refinance the cars, not even me with the house, he could save about $300 on his car, could save about $250 on hers, $550 a month, changing the debt structure just in their cars.
I mean, if you refinance the cars and you keep your same payment, you just pay it down faster.
You could do that too.
If you want. I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
Well, that's a great idea, depending on, you touched on it during the break, do they have a savings account?
Oh.
They don't have any savings because they're struggling to pay all the bills because their interest rates are so high on their house and their cars and their couple of credit cards. So, yeah, there's a lot of rules about that, but nobody would help them. So we've taken a plan and we're going to fix it. This will be super simple, but we're going to get their house fixed. We're going to get their credit fixed. We're going to get their house fixed, refinance their home, probably save them about $300 a month on the house. Tell them what to do on the cars. You're going to save about $550 there. This young couple on a fairly moderate income over about a 60-day window is going to save no less than $800 a month.
Wow. And they're staying in their home.
Staying in their home.
Keeping their cars.
Keeping their cars. Don't need to, I mean, they've got decent cars. They should be good for the next 5+ years. But think of what kind of a raise, $800 a month times 12, That's $9,600 a year. That's a $10,000 a year raise.
And can we just say, like, where was that money going prior to? It wasn't going to the principal. That
no,
was just going...
It's a waste because they have, let's be honest, poopy credit.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see some of these people that are driving. By the way, one of their interest rates is over 15%. Now, when you have, and let's be brutally honest, very bad credit. When a creditor is going to take the risk on you, they should earn extra interest. You shouldn't get the same interest rate as, say, a Cody
somebody
here who has an 800 credit score and has never had a dilemma ever in his life. So there is a risk reward to an investor. Okay, great, but you've bypassed that section of your life if you've fixed it. But they didn't fix it because nobody would tell them how to play the chess game to fix it.
So, I mean, should I be looking at this every 6 months or so? Because I remember last time I refinanced, they said you got about a six-month window before you can do it again. So, I mean, do people regularly refinance every 6 months and try and...
No, it depends on where interest rates are.
Okay.
You know, again, if you can save, no matter what, like if you look at a house, I don't want to refinance a house unless I can earn that money back in between 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
Now, if I take a 30-year loan and I can pay the cost of the refinance back, let's say in 3 years, that means I'm using 10% of the savings if I stayed there 30 years. Here's the if. If I stayed there 30 years, I'd save 90% of what I just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But most people are not going to be in their home more than 5 to 7 years. So if I can't save that money back over three, I don't feel like it's worth it because you're not going to be in the home long enough. Like if you said, hey, I'm out of my house in 2 years, should I refinance? No, you're going to waste your money.
Yeah.
But it depends on where interest rates are. Now, COVID drove interest rates down because the Federal Reserve is holding them down. How are they doing that? They're buying the mortgage-backed securities. So they've artificially dropped interest rates for you and I as consumers. Why are car companies artificially dropping their interest rates?
To get people to spend?
They're trying to get more dollars in because they've had so little good quality loans coming in. But again, it's most of the car loans right now. You know, when you hear the announcer go, OAC as fast as he can, and you got the little asterisks underneath,
yeah.
You know, they want the 740 credit scores. They want the really good borrowers, if you will. And the people that don't have that have the teen interest rates.
Yeah. I mean, you're not getting a Mercedes with zero down and zero interest without having a perfect credit score.
I would assume not.
Right. But
go try. Try it right now on your phone and let's see what we get.
But when you see those advertisements and you see that marketed, that's the carrot.
Oh, they're selling it.
Yeah.
So, again, what I think your question is, how often should I look at my budget?
Yeah, well.
I do a piece of paper and a pencil every month.
Okay.
And I track it because I want to know where I am. And like you had said, do you have a savings account? Do you have a cushion? The couple that I talked to last night has no savings, has no cushion because they are absolutely obliterated with interest. They're not getting ahead, and they're never going to get ahead unless we fix their credit score, which they're already doing what I need them to do. I guarantee you it's going to take less than a week for their credit score to be where I need to start the refinance on the home. When the refinance of the home is done, then I'm going to go tell them to pull the trigger on refinancing the cars. And over that 60-day window, they will save no less than $800 a month. Now, they have no money in savings. If they took $800 a month for the next 6 months, you know, we're all good in math, 6 times 8 is 48, they're going to have about $5,000 in savings. There's the cushion they've never, ever had. Then what happens after that? Now you can either start paying down your principal or, hey, they don't have any college savings for their kid. They really don't even have any IRAs put away for themselves. Let's start putting some money away so we never have these troubles again. So when a refrigerator breaks, when a washer dryer breaks, you don't have to go put it on credit, or worse, just go without.
Right.
Now, you know, again, you talk about options. How much money are they wasting in interest right now?
Oh, you just mentioned, I mean, you're $800, right?
That's very close to what the interest is. Out of all of that, if you rearrange, now obviously you're going to re-extend, you're going to add some to principal, but it's about $700 that they're wasting in interest for nothing other than they had bad credit or have bad credit right now. Why don't we talk about how to fix this stuff? I mean, I think everybody needs a financial coach. Everybody needs a written budget, and everybody needs a plan where, you know, if we teach somebody the basics how to drive, You got to read the little DMV manual. You got to go take the test. You got to know, you know, who yields. If four people pull to the stop sign at the same time, who goes first?
Right, the one to the right.
The one to the right goes first. So, well, if all four of you get there at the same time, then you have a dilemma. What was the old Robin Williams thing when you're on a hill driving a manual? You know, you just start waving the person around you because you don't know how to start up the hill in a manual again.
I was always so nervous I was going to roll back into somebody.
So
over by the hospital?
Yep. But you think about, it's so simple that this couple, it's changing some balances. It's really getting a couple things paid off that should have been paid off years ago. And it's probably going to take them about $1,000 paying things down, get it all done, and they'll never have this problem again.
So, I mean, for this couple to use your services or to have this conversation with you and you were to pencil out their budget and give them this roadmap, I mean, how do they get started? And do they just sit with you, or are there other people in your office?
Oh, everybody in the office. The one thing that I do appreciate about Academy Mortgage is everybody will take this time. It's not a churn and burn. It's not one of the online shops that's just dial for dollars. Look, come in. I love having these conversations. We probably sat there for 2 hours. I would much rather deal with somebody who genuinely wants help and needs help because I want to see their growth over the next 20, 30, 40 years. I love seeing that stuff. And it's way better when you walk into, say, Walmart or Albertsons and somebody goes, you know, 6 to 9 months later, dude, you really helped me. Oh, my gosh, look at what's happened since then. And you hear the story about, wow, we actually have a little savings. Oh, the house payment doesn't feel so bad anymore. Oh, we're not stressed about making the car payment. But it's come in, sit down, have a conversation. Most people are just scared to have the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you're like, you see them financially naked, you know?
You like that phrase, right? But
did you come up with that?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was either you or Andrea, one of the two.
No,
it
was you. Okay. Yeah. But it's one of those things that you get to say, look, let's make a difference here. And I don't like to see people wasting money. It frustrates me to no end. And sometimes, you know, you look at people's bank statements, and when somebody goes, I just don't have any money to do what you're asking. Okay. Let's
Dude,
look at where you're spending your money.
You can clean your own pool and save $100 a month, you know?
You could do that, or you could cook at home a little bit more, or you don't have to go out for an expensive coffee 3 times a day. And I'm not saying any of those are wrong. Some of my best friends are restaurant owners, you know, again, coffee shops. I love that stuff. But it's a choice of one versus the other. And if you tell me you don't have the money to do X, then let's look and make sure you're not spending money on Y, and that's the reason you don't have it.
And that's probably the problem. That's the problem with, I don't know, our society, or I don't know how many or what percentage of us, but that is it. I mean, we like to indulge and we like to spend money when we don't have it.
It is very much,
you know,
feel good. And look, you mentioned the commercials. Every commercial on TV and radio is selling you something. And it's not meant to be painful. It's meant to give you feelings of goodness on one side. The product is what's going to give you the feelings of the goodness. How many commercials do you see start out with here's the pain point. Oh, here's the awfulness. And they make you feel bad for 10 seconds. And then they sell you on how you're going to feel good at the end of 20 seconds.
The ones that want a donation, like save animals or things, they do that.
Well, they all do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the mop. You know, did you spill stuff on the floor? Look, my mop works.
Look how difficult it is.
You know, so, but everybody has that ability, and we do a horrible job in this society of teaching people money skills. We do a horrible job teaching people credit score skills. And look, do you have a number on your forehead that tells me your credit score?
Not yet.
No, I have no, yeah, not yet. That's probably coming.
I'm sorry.
But there's nothing that says I have good credit, and I don't even care what your credit score or my credit score is. You don't need it until you're going to go borrow something. And at that moment, your insurance, your credit, potentially a job, you need a really good credit score. But most people just have no idea the basics on how to manipulate it is the best word I can come up with.
Streamline it or
optimize
it?
You can optimize. I mean, technically, you can manipulate your credit score over a 30-day window, and most people have the ability to reduce the current balance compared to their available credit line. That is the number one thing that couple last night is going to go do. You should never owe more than 50% of what your credit line is. The very best credit score is under a third or even under 25%, but bare minimum under a third of that credit line. If you owe a penny more than 50%, it's actually negative. So that couple, not owing a whole heck of a lot on credit, but doesn't have a whole heck of a lot of credit, to the world, it looks like they're literally maxed out.
Gotcha.
Now, who's scarier, the one who has 40 credit cards and they're all paid to zero, or the one who has one credit card for $500 and has $500 charged?
That guy.
That guy is scarier for credit scoring methodology, but the one who has 40 credit cards free and clear could put himself in way more harm's way.
Oh, okay.
But the credit score drives the one with the $500 balance maxed out much lower because it looks like they're already living beyond their means.
I mean, that's the customer the bank wants, is that guy. They don't want the guy who's not using it and not,
well,
maxing
now
out,
you
not
said,
making the interest, you know?
Now you said the dirty little secret in the industry is the credit bureaus tell you those scores. The banks want those because they're going to get the interest payments over time. You know, they really don't like the people that pay their credit cards off at the end of every month. And one of the secrets is, go get the card or two that pays you some kind of bonus points, some kind of benefit. Sky Miles, Discover Card, cash back, whatever those things are. If you can be disciplined and you run all your stuff through one or two credit cards for a reason and pay it off like cash at the end of every month, be one of those people that uses those programs. But let's be honest, where do those credit card companies get the money to pay for those programs?
From the customers.
It ain't for free. It's from the people that carry balances month after month.
So question, and I don't know if this is manipulation or optimization or whatever, but I just started doing it. I didn't say I started doing it, but it's something I've been doing, and I noticed my credit score going up because of it. I transitioned all my payments to my credit card, and I paid that off like every week. You know, I just keep throwing money on it. I just wanted to keep a balance low. Anyway, somebody told me, hey, quit paying it to zero. All right, keep it, you know, floating in the middle there. But did the frequency of those payments actually help my credit?
Frequency, no,
okay.
But keeping the balance underneath those trigger points did. And so when you tell me that you're paying it weekly, it's not the frequency,
okay.
But because technically, from a raw technicality, the credit bureaus only have to compile the data once every 30 days. So if your balance is down when they compile and re-report the data, now you have a good credit score. But let's say they compile the data on the 16th and you made the payment on the 18th. When they compile the data on the 16th, you had a higher credit balance, so it looks like you have a worse credit score. So the reason you see it low is you're never crossing that threshold barrier of 33% or 50%, if you will. And that's the biggest thing, that 30% of your credit score is actually based on the amount of credit you owe compared to the credit lines that you have. So a full 30% of your credit score is in complete control of you. It has nothing to do with what your payment history was in the past. It's what you owe right now, today, that could be changed this afternoon, this evening, tonight, whenever you want to change it. And that's what this couple is going to do, is they're going to go pay a couple things down. We're going to go do what's called a rescore. We're going to have them force this stuff into the credit bureaus. That will then get their credit score where it should be based on the new balances, because we're not changing payment history. We're not adding or subtracting trade lines. We're literally just changing the amount of credit that they have consumed compared to their credit lines. Oh. Easy to do, right?
It sounds like it, yeah.
Well, you tell me you pay this weekly. So
yeah.
Let's talk about that and some other tricks and tips and really just getting people back to being fiscally responsible. It is 8:23 in the morning on Friday, August 6th. This is Money Talk AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 180899, with Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081. Good morning, Yuma. Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. Derek and Cody just chatting mortgages and credit and income and things that I wish more people talked about. And I know it's not super sexy to talk credit. It's the weirdest thing. I think it's kind of cool, but most people don't think it's super sexy.
I mean, it's like I said, I kind of equate it to like talking with your doctor, you know, like, you know, there's things you could be doing to be better, but you need that real honest look and that honest opinion.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you say doctor, because I use that analogy a lot. So if you're sick, like you're really sick, do you go, hey, doc, I'm not going to come in until I'm better, so I'm just going to get healthy, then I'm going to come see you?
Right.
Do you ever see that?
I mean, no, but you should be going for checkups.
You should go for checkups, but if something's wrong, you go see your doctor.
Right away, yeah.
Okay. But I still have, or the ER.
Yeah, that's what I think.
But I still have people go, well, I can't come talk to you because my credit's really bad, so I'm gonna fix my credit. You don't know how to fix your credit.
Well, and you just shared, like, you can help fix the credit within 30 days. I mean, I shouldn't say it like that. Like, there's probably some disclaimers. But
there's a lot of things that can be done, but that's the problem is, in our industry, people think they know how to fix their credit, and there's an order and a sequence to things. And if you do things out of sequence, it's not going to go well. Or you potentially could damage what you're doing, because if you do step five before step two, it may completely extend the time 6 months before you're able to fix something. But again, it's that doctor analogy that, look, just go sit down with somebody you trust. And whether it's me, whether it's somebody else, whether it's anybody in the office, we've got a dozen people there that love sitting down and doing this, because let's be brutally honest, I promise you, everybody in the office, including me, has made the exact same mistakes over time. You know, if you think about it this way, have you ever seen somebody who has made it and really hustles and seems very just motivated to make it in life?
I mean, yeah, you have those heroes.
How many times did they come from maybe a household that wasn't, and they had to overcome because they saw something negative and they just had to fix it themselves?
Almost all the time.
That's almost everybody in our offices, I promise you. Whether it's myself or Bill or Farrell or Tara, Ray. I mean, we've all been there and we've all done it. I promise you, I've made the exact same mistakes. And you look back and go, well, that was dumb. And I've talked about it before, the mistakes I made when I bought my first home. I don't want people to make those mistakes. But I made the same credit card mistakes as a college kid. You went to college?
Oh, yeah.
How many credit card applications did you...
It was so easy to get a credit card.
Sure it was. Because if you're in college,
yeah,
and if you're on student loans, who generally had to co-sign the student loans?
Your parents, yeah. You're tied to them.
But credit card companies aren't stupid. They know that if a college kid goes and gets credit and they screw up and don't make the payments, there's probably somebody behind them who's going to make the payments. I mean, I had credit card applications coming in by the hundreds when I was at NAU. I mean, it was like I'd have 10 credit card applications. No letter from mom and dad. Gosh darn it. You know, the next day, 10 more. It was the stupidest thing. Although, I have a really funny story about how I broke my truck engine and needed all those credit cards. So, but, I mean, I was that dumb kid that when I was in college, I had like 8 credit cards because I thought I was cool and I thought I was special and I thought I deserved it all. No, they knew they could make money off of the interest rates because I was a dumb college kid and I didn't pay the balances off.
And what were those interest rates back then?
Oh, they were in the 12s and 14s.
Double
and
digits,
A couple of them were in the 19s. And you look back, I mean, stupid story. But so I was in college, buddies of mine, you know, we all had four-wheel drive trucks and we went out in the mud and did stupid stuff. Well, we had this long stretch of mud and everybody couldn't get through it. So I had this brilliant idea. This is great. I just go back farther, and I just drive faster.
Yeah.
So I drive faster through this mud puddle. Well, the water goes in through my air intake.
Oh,
it's literally all water, so it goes through the air filter down into the cylinders. My car stalls. I didn't realize why it stalled, so we pulled it out. Wouldn't start, so we tried to pull start it because it was a manual transmission. Still won't pull start. I'm like, must have taken a cable off the battery. I'm stupid enough to get myself into trouble, not smart enough to get myself out of trouble. So, you know, we're towing it back into town. I tried to pull start it a couple more times on the way. Great. So now think, college kid, broken truck, take it into the shop. Funny story. So my truck's on the ground, hood's up. It was an old four-cylinder Nissan. Back then there were 8 spark plugs,
right,
one on each side. So they had one whole side of spark plugs out. There was a white car with leather interior up on the lift next to it with the windows down. The mechanic turned the car over, my car over, and mud shot out of the cylinders in the air into that car. Like, ooh, that's going to be expensive, and it's not my problem because I didn't turn the key.
Yeah.
But, so come to find out, water was in the cylinders. I scarred the cylinders when we tried to pull start it repeatedly.
The mud.
Yep. Yeah. So, ruined the engine, put a new engine in. Now, this was back in 92, 93, so it's been a while. And that $2,500 engine replacement. Now, how does a college kid pay for a $2,500 replacement?
A little bit at a time?
No, I pulled out 5 credit cards.
Oh, okay. Well,
and
that's
what
I thought, yeah.
I put $500 on this card because that was my max. $500 on this card because that's my max. $500 on this one. I maxed out 5 credit cards right then and there. And it took me no less than 3 years to pay all of that debt off because I was that college kid that literally could never get ahead of the interest rates.
Have you crunched the numbers? Like, have you crunched the numbers to see what that engine actually cost you?
I know, but I don't even want... It was well more than...
$2,500.
Oh, well more. Well more.
Okay.
It's in excess of 6.
Oh, wow.
Because it took me a long time to pay it off. And as I got one thing down, then something else in life would come up. And you just never got out of the way of that because nobody taught me how to change my credit score to get a better interest rate to do a different credit card. But I tell you that story because I've been there. I've maxed out cards. I've done stupid stuff that caused me to have to max out my credit cards. And the lady who, when she rang up that invoice back in the day, she actually, and we're good friends, but now she laughed and chuckled. And she goes, I've never seen anybody have to pull out 5 credit cards to pay for a repair bill. I'm like, well, nobody's been that stupid before, but apparently I am. But you think, those things, that's why I don't mind sitting down with people for an hour or two. I promise you, I've made literally all of those mistakes. I've made the mistakes of maxing things out. I made the mistakes previously of, oh, I forgot to set it as an automatic payment. There's lots of things that people do to shoot themselves in the foot. But there's a lot of things you can do to fix it all and make it completely different 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year later. And am I glad that happened to me? Oh, but is it really good background character building stuff that has helped me where I am now? Yes. So,
would you change it?
No, because we had a ton of fun going out there messing around. But it is one of those stories that you think, huh, I wonder what I could have done with that extra $6,000 over a few years being a college kid. You know, how much more Top Ramen and Hormel chili and Tang did I eat and drink because I didn't have the money to do anything else?
Right.
But fixed it. And the same as the younger couple last night, easy to fix. The same as I don't care who it is. It's all fixable. There's nothing that's not fixable one way or the other. It's just a matter of, is it a day, a week, a month, a year? And let's be honest, you're going to have to fix it at some point anyway, or it's going to affect everything else because either you fix it now or potentially affects your retirement later.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Cody, when do you want to retire? Don't say tomorrow.
I think somewhere around 55, 60 would probably be appropriate, you know.
Okay, so let's pretend 60. Let's go longer. How old are you now?
37.
Okay, so minimum 23 years.
Yeah.
How many more houses are you going to buy between now and 60?
Oh, man, what is it, like 4 or 5? I don't even know.
Say one every 5 years.
Isn't that the average? One every five? Yeah.
So are you going to have the credit and the financial discipline to buy 4 more homes and keep those as rentals as you change and move up the food chain or you move to different areas of the country or wherever? Are you going to keep those as rentals because you're making good decisions? Or are you going to sell the home, make a little money, go buy a boat or a jet ski or a Razor? And I'm not saying those are bad, but people consume the equity and go get into another home with little to no money down and never keep the next investment.
I mean, ideally, I'd rather own an apartment complex than a rental home.
Cool.
Great.
When are you going to do that?
That's the goal, right? I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I would rather transfer the equity into something smaller, like an apartment complex, like a duplex or something, than to keep a larger home renting it to single family. That was just my thought. But I don't know. You're the expert in this.
There's pros and cons to both.
I know, right?
So you know, the when you say apartment complex, the profit margin per door is going to be larger, but it's going to be apartment dweller mentality.
Right.
A single family home is going to be people who generally have a family and are going to be there a longer. The profit margin is generally lower, but at the same time, you have less, in my experience, less repairs, less random destruction.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what the... I'm just saying, like, those are the ideas, but...
Great questions.
But I don't even know what the better return on the investment would be, because you're right. You know, if you're...
But we're getting you talking about return on investment. We're getting you thinking that it's an investment as opposed to it's just a sold and done. The same thing is how much are you putting in 401Ks or IRAs and putting the nest eggs away so there's cash and assets like properties.
Do you consider the home an investment or a liability?
Well, technically, to me, it's a investment.
Okay.
Now, if you say I'm buying a home higher than I can afford, no, that's a liability. But it's not an investment from the standpoint that it is generating revenue to you. So,
right.
You know, if you go invest in, let's say, an energy stock that is going to give you a 5% rate of return, and I'm just making numbers up. Okay, you've got a return on your investment that you can calculate. The house, you're going to live somewhere. So the reason I call it an investment is if you're going to go spend, let's say, $1,000 a month to rent a place and your house is $1,200 a month, let's say it's higher than what your rent is, but you're paying down $300 in principal and the rest is interest and taxes and insurance, I'm still paying A, less because I'm saving my principal. B, the home value should go up over time. Not always, but they should go up over time. All the while, I'm reducing my principal balance, and so that spread, that equity is growing, so I'm really building a savings nest egg. And that's what your owner-occupied home is it's just a way that I'm going to live somewhere.
Yeah,
I may
living,
as well.
You're living in your savings account.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you build yourself a nest egg, and for most Americans, the home is going to be A, their largest purchase, but B, over their lifetime, one of their largest savings account nest eggs, which is why turn on the TV and look at all these reverse mortgage conversations.
That's insane.
Well, it's a great product for a lot of people. And you know, again, there's sometimes that it's the right product, sometimes it's not the right product. But for a lot of people, what does a reverse mortgage tell you? It says, I have a lot of equity in my home, and I need to cut my bills down because I probably don't have investments like with Tom and the group at UM Investment Group. I don't have enough cash coming in for my investments, so I need to rearrange and I'm going to consume the equity of my home.
Okay.
Now, I don't care if you're leaving anything to your kids that way. There's nothing that says that couple needs to leave their house free and clear to their kids. People want to leave things to their kids, so when you see people consuming their equity, they're making the choice to say, I'm going to live on my house that I spent 20 or 30 years paying it down. Now I'm going to consume it. And at the end of my life, the home is gone. And it's that's their choice.
Yeah.
But the reverse mortgage is one of those products that is there because people may not have saved or invested enough over their lifetime.
So it's an option.
It is a great option. So, and they're safe. There's nothing wrong with them.
Do you offer those? Or
we
do. Do you have solutions?
We do. And the bank can't take your house just because as long as, and here's the thing, there's a risk component to the bank because what you base them on is the life expectancy table. So there's certain things that we have to do. You can't loan more than a certain percentage of the home based on somebody's age because you look at the mortality tables. Now, if you live there, let's say you do the option where there's no payment, you still have to pay your taxes and insurance. That's still something separate, but the principal and interest portion. Let's say your life expectancy table, Cody, is 87, and you live to be 104. You don't get to or have to sell the home at 87. You legitimately are living there until one of two things. You move out, well, three. You move out because once it's no longer your owner-occupied, you have to pay it back. You sell it or you die. Now, if you don't die and you live there until 102, even though the loan was based on your expectancy table of 87, it's still in place. And so now that you see, you know, life expectancy rising, there's people who are going to do really well. Now, interestingly enough, the life expectancy for an average male in the country this last year dropped.
75, 73 now?
Yeah, dropped by 2 years for whatever reason. So I don't know if that's bad data. I don't know what it is, but, you know, you start looking at these things. So the reverse mortgage is not a bad product. It's something that is a option for people, but it's a option for people who didn't have some good advice over the last 30 or 40 years, or they're just choosing that they want to consume their equity because maybe they don't care to leave it to anybody else and they want to live a better quality of life while they're here, which I totally support. If you go into it and say, you know what, we're going to do this for the rest of our lives and this is what it looks like, cool, that's your money. But there's some people who do it because they don't have Social Security because they never actually worked stable, consistent jobs. They don't have any retirement because they never put anything into their 401ks or their IRAs. And legitimately, the only thing that they have left is their house that they paid on for the last 20 or 30 years.
And so that's their nest egg. So versus selling it and downsizing, you can at least live in it and receive some of that value out of it.
And those are great options for people.
So if there's a balance, what happens to that balance? Will that be, I guess, you know, sent to whatever beneficiaries?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the bank cannot keep anything more than the note balance that was owed.
Okay.
So the, let's say both people, you know, say husband and wife, and they both pass away. The estate still is kind of in control. So depending on what their will or their trust said, the next of kin, if you will, is in control. They don't get to keep the loan there, but now they either have to sell it, and then the home is sold, the balance is paid off, the estate keeps the profit, if you will, or the balance of the equity. Now, let's say nobody wants it, or worse, the home is upside down. So let's say you owe $200,000 and the home's only worth $150,000. Well, then nobody in the estate's going to want it, and you just let it go through the foreclosure process. And then the bank who originally made the loan, who's on the hook for it, they get it. Now, most of these loans are FHA or HUD insured. There's a conventional product, but this is the reason there's mortgage insurance on those, is there's the risk that they could actually be upside down when you turn around and dispose of the property, if you will.
Okay.
So nobody loses any equity, but the process to get rid of it could be long and cumbersome, depending on if it's got to go through probate or if it's really defined on who the next of kin is that's in control of it. But the misnomer of the bank's going to take my home, no, the bank's not going to take your home. The bank's only going to take the money that was owed. The only downfall with a reverse mortgage, now, I want everybody to think about how compounded interest works. Why do we love to put money in the stock market or our 401ks or our mutual funds?
Because it grows.
Because it grows, and interest compounds over time. And so you put something away at, let's say, 7.2% interest. It doubles in 10 years. That's the rule of 72. But, Cody, on your house, what do you pay every month when you make your house payment?
Your insurance.
Okay, say the four things.
Well, that's built in.
Principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. Interest is the main one that I want you to focus on. Every 30 days, you're paying the interest that's due. Does your interest compound on your normal 30-year fixed mortgage? No, because you're paying all of the interest that's due. On a reverse mortgage, when you're not making a payment, what is happening to the interest? It's compounding. So if you owe, and let's just use a rough number, $100,000 loan today at 5% interest, how much interest did you accrue at the end of year one?
Well, 5%.
5%, which is $5,000. So at the end of year one, that reverse mortgage now owes $105,000. The interest rate is still 5%. So how much interest is now due at the end of year two? $5,025. So now you've compounded at the end of year two, you owe $110,025. At the end of year three, the 5%. So you understand it's not $5,000 every year. The interest starts compounding on itself. And so you see, just like an investment, that chart would start sloping up the later you get because the interest is compounding on itself. So too does the reverse mortgage, that after about 5 to 7 years, you see these people are never getting out of the home because what they owe on the home has become drastically bigger. So it is one of those products that, for most people, you really want to get that decision correct when you make it. First couple years, very easy to turn around, sell the home to get out of it. But would it really frustrate you to know, Cody, that at year one when you took it out, you might owe $100,000, and at the end of year, let's say six, you owe $135,000?
Wow.
Wouldn't that make you kind of sick in the stomach
a little
bit?
Yeah.
So And again, those numbers are just kind of anecdotal, but that's what the reverse mortgage is. And again, that's why some of the banks offer them, is they know the interest that they're going to make over time becomes more and more. So unlike your loan, can I ask what's your interest rate?
Oh, 3.5, something
okay,
like that.
Okay, so yeah, not a bad interest
much.
Rate. But
could be better.
What is that bank, let's say it's 3.5, don't care, but at 3.5, what is the investor making on that loan?
Well, like the 3.5%?
Nope.
What?
3.25. Because the servicer makes a quarter point, sometimes 30 basis points, but a quarter point. So whoever you write the check to makes a quarter point, and the rest of the interest goes to whoever the end investor is. Could be a stock, a bond, a mutual fund, whoever has actually, not really stocks, but whoever's bought that mortgage-backed security, a lot of times it's life insurance companies. A lot of times it's your 401k or pension plan, and you don't realize that's what they're invested in. But that 3.25 is what they're earning. What are you earning when you have a reverse mortgage? Now that interest rate, which is higher than a normal 30-year fix, starts to compound on itself, so the profit margin on these potentially goes significantly higher, especially if they're government insured, if it's an FHA insured loan, even if you lent more money than what was able to be recouped in the house, how much money is the bank getting back?
Well, only what they're on the hook for.
They're getting what they're on the hook for, and if the home is undervalued and they're owed more than what the home is worth, they turn it into the MI company, which is the federal government through HUD. They're getting their money back, or at least a portion thereof. So these are very profitable loans and very riskless.
So, I mean, if you were to do a reverse mortgage, would you want to do it, I guess, when you're younger and you're paid off? I mean,
you have to be beyond a certain age, so you can't go do
it. No. I guess what I'm saying is 65, 70, something like that. Mm-hmm. So you want to do it when you're 65, 70 versus when you're 85? I mean, is there more of a benefit?
Yeah, it all depends. No. So it depends on your personal financial situation. Let's say you just crossed the threshold to get there. Well, if you just crossed the age threshold to get there, that means that percentage-wise, I can lend less of your home or give you less of the money out because of that expectancy table. The later in life, percentage-wise, we could lend more of the home or give you more cash back. But it just depends on what you need because, again, most people are using this as a, oh, my gosh, I may not have set my financial house of cards up correctly, and it looks really difficult to manage this going forward. And again, there's some people that go, you know what, I just don't want to make a house payment anymore, but I really like living here. So let me do this, and I'm going to live here the rest of my life. But again, you're kind of setting up those last bit of roots to say, this is where I'm going to live full-time for my owner-occupied home. Doesn't mean can't travel. Doesn't mean you got to be there 365 days a year. But it does mean that if this is your owner-occupied home here, you're not going to go buy a home up in Fargo, North Dakota, and go live up there 8 months out of the year because then this is no longer your owner-occupied. The bank would turn around and ask you to sell this.
But you can have an RV, right?
You can have an RV.
There you go, buddy.
See, you just said the magic words. So it's just a planning thing, and I'm going to dial it back to what I wish more Americans did is a one-page little financial plan of what am I doing with my budget? What am I doing with my savings?
What's it take to get in front of you and to go through this one-page plan?
Phone call and a smile and a handshake.
Okay.
I mean, you know, again.
But I mean, like, are you booked out 3 weeks? I mean, what's it going to look like? I mean,
it just kind of depends. I mean, my schedule fills up, but it just call the office. I mean, the 247-9089, and we'll have a good conversation. It's easier than you think, and it's, I mean, we're typically there late, sometimes weekends and stuff, but I appreciate the question. This is the fun stuff for me. Yeah. The minutia of the paperwork is awful. You know, we are supposed to be paperless, and we are anything but paperless in this industry. I mean, the paper has tripled, quadrupled from what it used to be. But the humanistic stuff of, hey, Cody, let me help you fix this. Let me help you see that there's a bigger, broader future for what you can do financially because of the credit game. And most people just don't understand the rules of the game.
And that's it. I mean, and like I said, I had that question about the frequency. I thought I was doing something to improve. it didn't make any difference at all. I just kept it between that 30 mm-hmm. and 50%.
And that's all it is. Well, it's kind of like, have you ever heard the, hey, let's make a biweekly payment and we're going to knock off years of our mortgage. You ever heard that?
Yeah, but it doesn't. I heard the 13th payment. I mean,
that's so what do most Americans think of when they think biweekly? They think twice
a
per
month. Yeah.
Okay. But you just said 13 because you know there's 52 weeks in a year. Divide that by 2, that's 26 biweekly payments.
Yeah.
If you made a biweekly payment 26 times a year, that's 13 payments, not 12. That means you forced yourself to make one extra payment per year. That's the secret, is if you made one extra payment per year, you basically take a 30-year loan and chop it down to 22 and a half years. So it's not the biweekly doing any good for you. It's making one extra payment per year. Now, how many of these companies, frustrates me to no end, they charge you like $350 to set up this biweekly program. The money doesn't go to the mortgage company. The money goes to them. So now you got a third-party company holding your money, which means they're earning little bits of interest off your money. And then they make your mortgage payment on time. And when they've collected enough at the end of the year, then they send in the 13th payment. So they get to hold a little bit of your money extra and earn some interest on it, and you paid them $350 to hold your money. If you want somebody to hold your money for a year, give me $350 and I'll hold your money. Cody, would you hold somebody's money for a year?
Yeah, I thought it was just a personal thing. I thought you just do it.
Well, I mean, some mortgage companies will let you do it. You know, a lot of auto companies will now allow you to apply extra principal. Yeah. But gosh darn it, how many things do you get in the mail that is, start this biweekly payment and it'll chop your mortgage by 8 years.
Yep. And that's how they do it.
They're not saving you any interest. They're forcing you to pay one extra payment per year, which saves you the interest. And unfortunately, most people think, oh, there's 4 weeks in a month. That's why the biweekly salesmanship has become so popular, because most people don't understand there's actually 13 biweekly payment months a year instead of the 12.
Yeah, I just assume because like broadcast, you know, that 13-week window. I mean, you know, every quarter, 13
mm-hmm.
weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But most people don't understand that again, there's 52 weeks in a year, divided by 2, etc.
I maybe it was that Rich Dad Poor Dad book back in the day, but mm-hmm. I just remember the 13th payment being like, that is your key to eliminating a ton of unnecessary interest.
And you're 100% correct, which you can do yourself by sending in one extra payment per year, by applying 1/12 extra to principal, however you want to do it, but you don't have to spend $350 to have somebody make your payment for you. We've got a call. You're on the air.
Yeah, okay. You guys are talking about that bi-weekly payment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I done it through Wells Fargo Mortgage. But they take it out of my checking account, so they can't be holding it, can they?
Well, they're not. But so it depends on who the mortgage company is. And if it's directly through your mortgage servicer, those are fantastic. And I fully support those. The ones that I'm talking about is when you get the postcard in the mail or you get the email that says, let's start this biweekly program. There's actually companies out there that sell the service that they have, call it a fee to set up the account. It's $300-$350 sometimes. You send the money to them and then they make your mortgage payments, which become increasingly difficult to stop because they're going to hold the money, and until they've got the full payment, they don't send it in. So when you do it directly with your servicer and it comes right out of your checking account straight into your mortgage, 100% support that. The interesting thing is when you lose control and you hire a third-party company to do it, and you pay them additional monies to do it, to me that's just wasting cash that you could do yourself. Like, it sounds like you're intelligent in doing it yourself.
Well, I was worried because I that's the way I wanted it set up, because I knew that you would make that extra payment and it would cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
But then is the bank doing that?
Yeah, no. So if you go directly to your servicer, or you have it going directly from your checking savings as an additional principal payment, love that. And so, you know, as Cody and I were talking about, if you simply forced yourself to A, make one extra payment per year, or figure out what your payment is and divide that by 12, add that as a principal payment per month, fantastic. You've basically done the one extra payment per year, and you'll take a 30-year loan down to 22 and a half years.
Okay, now that I've got it on biweekly, can I go ahead and maybe one time out of a month or so do another payment? And
sure,
that
you
would
can.
Be okay?
Every mortgage company in the country has to accept principal payments unless you have some kind of an oddball loan with a private investor who potentially won't. But Fannie, Freddie, FHA, VA, USDA loans all accept additional principal payments at any time.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Have a great day. So, you know, one of the other things that I wish more people knew is the biweekly payments, fantastic stuff. Have you ever heard of a recast?
A recast?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay. That's not when you're fishing and you screw something
up.
Because
yeah.
I probably would when the lure's back in the tules and you're just not getting it. So
That would be where you recast, yeah.
Yeah. And again, what he's talking about is making extra principal payments, and this is a quick one. So you have a lot of people who come into money or they want to pay down their loan and they're going to drop, let's say, Cody, you've got a pretty good interest rate, so I probably wouldn't move anything around. But if you had and you said, I'm only going to spend $20,000 and I'm going to pay my principal down and I want to refinance the loan so I take advantage of that lower principal balance. Now,
okay.
I might talk you into buying another piece of real estate or investing with Tom or doing something, but if this is where the money's going to go, on Fannie and Freddie loans, conventional loans, most of the time FHA, VA don't allow it, or it's a much more difficult process. Fannie and Freddie allow a recast, which is if you do more than a $10,000 principal reduction once per year, no more, you can call the servicer, and for generally a fee of about $300 to $350, seems like that's an industry norm,
okay.
They will re-amortize the new lower balance over the remaining months of the loan.
Okay.
So it's like refinancing your home but keeping the interest rate. So if you're happy with your interest rate and you do have money and you want to pay down your home and take advantage of a lower payment, recasting your loan by doing that large principal reduction. Now, it doesn't mean you can do $1,000 this year and $1,000 next year and $2,000 the year after and then go, hey, I paid $10,000 down, now I'm going to recast it. It's in a chunk, $10,000 or more as a one-time principal balance. There are some servicers out there that say it has to be 10% of the balance of the loan.
Okay.
So if you had a $300,000 loan, they're not going to recast unless you put $30,000 down. But recasting is a way to take advantage of a way to drop your payment without having to deal with refinancing the loan. Because let's be honest, if you had, let's say, a 2.75% interest rate from before and interest rates drift to 4%, are you ever going to want to refinance to take advantage of dropping your principal?
Oh, no.
No, never. But that's one of those things where I do see a lot of companies, they could tell you to recast, but they still want to refinance your loan because they don't tell you about that because they want to earn all that extra fee revenue by refinancing your loan.
So, I mean, I guess really it starts with coming to talk to you, to knowing if I need to recast it or I need to refinance or really what my options are.
Let's sit down and have a good cup of coffee. I mean, seriously, none of this is that scary. We're local. We love doing that. And again, it doesn't have to be me. It could be me, Bill, Ray, Tara, Farrell, Rosa, anybody in the office. But this is the stuff that I wish more people knew, that just take advantage of some of the secrets that are out there. And it's not like they're secret. You just may not even know the Google term to search for. Have you ever heard the term recast?
Well, now that you brought it up, yeah, I mean, I didn't, not until...
Because the industry doesn't teach you about that. And the same
insider
thing,
term.
The same thing, yeah, I'm sure there's radio terms that I wouldn't know here. and maybe not, I probably know.
Yeah, you've been doing this long enough.
So, but, you know, again, tons of stuff. If you have questions, call, email, come in, and we'll certainly give you some great advice. Let's have a cup of coffee, and let's make sure we put humans in better positions. And again, from all of us at Academy Mortgage, all of us at KBLU, if you are serving, have served, you have family members are serving, we appreciate the fact we can have these fun conversations on air in a free society. And more importantly, gentlemen and ladies who are listening, there are lots of people who are still overseas, not with their families. Let's remember them while we're enjoying the river and these wonderful summer days, that there are some people who are not with their families at this point. So, from all of us at KBLU and Academy Mortgage, this is Money Talk, AM 560, KBLU.
The opinions voiced in this show, Money Talk, are for general information only and not intended for specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management investment advisory services are offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
From the 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating Studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.